The G-Eagle stayed high in the air above the bandit, gliding idly to keep pace. Topar got them all back in the saddle as the bird reached the edge of Ediard's perception, and they started to ride slowly after the bandit, leaving the forest behind. All of them cast a seclusion haze, even though the nebulas above were wan shadows of their usual iridescence. The mild psychic baffle should be enough to deter all but the sharpest farsight at night. To bolster their safety, the G-Wolves ranged around them, while two of the night-viewing G-Eagles, under Verini's instruction, scouted ahead. Their own farsight was used to guide the horses through the darkness. "Is it just worn?" Maxon asked after half an hour. The bandit was making good time, alternatively jogging, then walking, heading southeast, and making use of the spinneys and thickets that were scattered across the plateau. He was clearly adept at moving unseen across the land. Even the G-Eagle had trouble keeping track of him in some of the deeper terrain. "I can't see any others," Ediard admitted. They deliberately kept a long way back in case the bandit had a powerful farsight, but I know from experience they can all use concealment.
"Great lady," Bolleton said, "there could be an army of them following us."
"There isn't," Ediard promised him. It was almost midnight when the bandit reached the top end of a narrow gully. He stopped and squatted down amid a clump of tall, weather-worn stones coated in thick chymos. The fast fox sped away, back the way they'd just come.
"Let's get into cover," Topar said.
They guided their mounts towards the nearest small wood. The fast fox chased back along its path, stopping to sniff cautiously every now and again.
"He's double-checking," Fressage said.
"Wherever he is, he considers it important. He's not going on until he's satisfied he's clear."
"Pull the G-Eagle back," Topar told Ediard. "If their camp is nearby, we can't risk exposing ourselves."
Ediard instructed the bird to spiral higher. The lay of the land was revealed to him, falling away to the east and split by several rocky gullies.
"Two of those gullies meet up, look," Verini said. "It's a hollow with a cliff along one side. Perfect place for a concealed camp."
"This is where I go in and check, then," Ediard said.
"I'll come with you," Dinlay said immediately.
"Thanks, but this is just a scout round to see if they're here. My concealment is stronger than anyone's, and I know I can shield myself if they do spot me." He could sense the concern in everybody's mind.
"Just be careful," Maxon said. "There's no city to protect you out here."
"I'm just going to look. I swear on the lady."
They all watched through the lone G-Eagle as the fast fox returned, and the bandit started down the gully.
"You've got 2 hours," Topar said. "After that, we will come looking for you."
It took Ediard a while to decide his approach. The top of the little cliff would surely be guarded, and fast foxes had an excellent sense of smell. But the gullies, too, would be watched. Possibly there'd be a tripwire that he might not detect.
"The cliff top it is, then."
As soon as he left the wood, he spun a concealment around himself, becoming no more than a dense wisp of dark air. His farsight swept out, alert for any hint of danger. Just as he'd suspected, there were fast foxes acting as sentinels above the cliff. They were curled up amid the boulders, littering the long grass, wide awake, sniffing the night air for foreign scents. He reached out with his long talk and began subverting their orders, coaxing them away from their obedient, attentive state, allowing them to stretch and settle down comfortably, scratch their hides and groom some of the day's mud away. A sensation of contentment began to percolate through their thoughts. When one finally registered his scent, it dismissed the intrusive smell as being an irrelevance. There was a lone human watcher standing near the edge of the cliff. He was concealed, but Ediard could sense his farsight washing back and forth intermittently. Once he'd worked out the approximate location, he used his own farsight to gently prise apart the concealment. The bandit was revealed, with the customary twin belts of ammunition boxes across his chest and a repeat-fire gun on a strap over his shoulder. There were also several knives and blade discs in various pouches. He even had an ordinary pistol. For all his toughness and weapons, he hadn't noticed how slack the fast foxes had become. His thoughts remained blissfully unsuspicious. Ediard picked a section of the cliff 80 yards away from the bandit and crept forward.
9 of them, Topar asked. You're sure?
Yes, Ediard said for the third time. One on top of the cliff controlling the fast foxes, five asleep below an overhang, and the one we followed settling down for the night. Then there's two watching the gullies, both concealed. There's also two fast foxes in each gully. I saw 5 G-Eagles and 9 terrestrial horses. What about supplies? Larby asked. A pile of sacks and bags, probably enough food for 3 weeks at least, and 3 boxes of ammunition. They're not done with raiding yet.
Bastards, Verini growled.
So can we take them? Topar asked. They outnumber us.
By 1, Fressage said dismissively, and we have surprise on our side.
I think it's possible, Ediard said. We'll need to approach down a gully. I can keep the fast foxes calm long enough for us to get past them. The trouble will be the 3 watchers. They long-talk each other all the time. As soon as one is taken out, the others will know.
So we have to be within striking distance of the camp when that happens, Topar said.
I can take out the 3 watchers fast enough, Ediard said, but I can't guarantee they won't call out, so you'll have to deal with the others, especially if we're going to take one alive.
I'd prefer to take 2 of them, Topar said.
Can our G-Wolves tackle the fast foxes? A mildly apprehensive Dinlay asked.
We can't take them with us, Ediard said. That's a whole new instinct I'd have to soothe out of the fast foxes, and a much stronger one than human scent. We have to keep this as simple as possible.
Lady, fast foxes.
They look fierce.
Look.
They are fierce, but that's all they've got. Don't waste time trying to shoot one, especially not in the dark. Heart squeeze them or pulp their brains. It barely takes a second to kill one. Fear is their only ally.
Oh, lady, Dinlay groaned.
Can you do this? Topar asked with quiet authority.
Dinlay took a breath, managing to appear quite offended.
Of course I can do this. It's only a fool who won't admit his worry.
Good. I want you to take out the 2 fast foxes in the gully as soon as Ediard deals with the watchers.
Certainly.
Larby glanced up at the sky.
Do we do this now?
No, Topar said. It's only a couple of hours until dawn, and we haven't slept. We spend the day laying up here in the woods and resting. Then tomorrow after midnight we strike.
Ediard had never felt so apprehensive before. All those times he'd sneaked into the House of Blue Petals, rescuing Manartha, arresting Boate, even facing down Bice atop his mansion, he'd known and understood what he was facing then. This was different. The bandits were an unknown, and he certainly wasn't as confident as Topar they could bring this off. It would only take 1 little mistake to alert the watchers, and then they'd be fending off 9 rapid-fire guns. At first light, 3 of the bandits left their camp, with G-Eagles orbiting high above them, and fast foxes trotting obediently alongside. One of them even sneaked through the edges of the wood where Ediard and his companions were encamped. Thankfully, they were well hidden beneath the boughs, and his G-Eagle never spotted them as it flew overhead. One of the bandits headed back to the pass at the side of Mount Alvis, while the other 2 went off in completely different directions.
Picket duty, Bolleton decided. They're making sure nobody gets close.
We were lucky.
No, Verini said. They're good, we're better.
We'll know tonight, Maxon said sagely.
Ediard didn't manage much sleep during the day. He was restless, his mind going over the plan again and again. It all depended on how fast he could eliminate the 3 watchers. That's if they only have 3 watchers. Suppose they change the pattern each night.
I would.
No, I wouldn't. He eventually fell asleep in the afternoon. Larby woke him. The picket guards are on their way back, he said as Ediard blinked up at the darkening sky. Buluku was already visible, its swaying violet length beset with waves of electric blue light. Odin Sea was rising above the eastern horizon, several scarlet spikes crowning its blue and green nucleus. He found its presence strangely reassuring.
I wonder if Boyd has reached it already.
Probably not. Who knows how far away it is?
There were an unusual number of stars in evidence, twinkling away in the wide gaps between the nebulas. At least Honius hadn't appeared in the firmament. The way Ediard was feeling, he would probably have taken that as a bad omen. Stupid, because the sky is just the sky no matter what. They ate together,
munching their way through half-stale bread and some cold pasties, followed by dried fruit. However, Topar did allow them to use the Jamalar oil stove to heat some water for tea and coffee. They were too far away for a fast fox to pick up the scent. "No one else left or joined during the day," Maxon said, "so it's just the 9 of them."
"You sure it's only 9? Fressage asked.
"I counted 9, Ediard assured him.
"I want everyone to oil and check their pistols," Topar said.
Ediard was thankful for the distraction, even though he knew he was sure he'd never use the weapon. His third hand was all he needed, but he went through the routine anyway. Just after midnight, Topar led them out of the woods. It took them an hour to retrace the route Ediard had taken the previous night, moving slowly and cautiously. As they reached the end of the gully, they linked hands before summoning up a concealment. Both Labi and Topar had insisted this was the best way of keeping in contact. Whispers and strong farsight might be detected by the watchers. It was a strange sensation. Ediard could feel Dinlay's hand in his, yet if he glanced back, he could see only a blur of darkness. Ediard walked forwards very slowly, using the weakest farsight he could to check the ground for tripwires or any other alarms. As he did so, he began to feel uncomfortable. A tremor ran through him. Something wrong. The boulder-strewn walls rose sharply as the slope carried them down towards the bandit camp. Soon the steep walls were topped by imposing rock cliffs. Below their feet the ground was turning damp. Nebula light revealed a meandering channel with thick reed tufts growing out between the stones. Ediard's trepidation grew with every step. Cold had claimed him now. He knew what this feeling was. The same as the night in Ashwell. The same as the entrapment atop the tower in Eerie. There can't be anything wrong. Not here. They don't know we're coming for them. They can't know. On top of that anxiety, Ediard began to worry if his long talk could reach the sentry fast foxes before they scented him coming. It would be touch and go, he knew. He hadn't realized the gully was this deep, nor so serpentine. The sense of foreboding grew even stronger. He thought he could hear a whisper, not with his ears, his mind. A very faint long talk? He walked through a small shallow stream, moving carefully so he didn't create a splash, only to find his boots sinking with alarming speed. Quicksand. Shit! He whispered through clenched teeth. He had to reach down with his third hand to stabilize the treacherous ground. His finger tapped 3 times on Dinlay's hand. Caution! There was a tremendous scraping sound from above, as if the stone cliffs were splitting. Ediard immediately sensed a number of powerful farsights stabbing down. Farsights that weren't fooled by concealment. The noise grew even louder.
Weapons! Topar shouted.
Ediard dropped his concealment and sent his farsight straight towards the sound. What he found shocked him for a dangerous instant. 3 huge boulders were starting to roll down the slope directly above them. As they moved, they dislodged a whole swarm of smaller boulders.
Ambush!
He bellowed, and immediately strengthened his shield. At once he realized it wouldn't do him the slightest use, not against such a cascade of stone. The mass starting to slide down on top of them was incredible. He instinctively grabbed Dinlay with his third hand and drew him up the slope on the other side.
"Hello again, Ediard," a mental voice sneered.
Ediard was scrambling up the slope as the first boulders picked up speed. He reached for Maxon, but he knew that voice and the cruelty behind it. The leader from Ashwell, the man who had killed Ediard's village, his life, Akeem's murderer. Dinlay had recovered from his abrupt flight. He started shooting his pistol across the gully. It was a signal for Topar and Fressage to open fire. Verini began to run back along the gully. The overwhelming noise from the accelerating avalanche was joined by the deadly sound of rapid-fire guns. The 3 large boulders had been covering the mouths of caves in the cliffs. Now 12 bandits were spilling out, taking aim on Ediard and his companions. The only thing preventing immediate death was the avalanche itself. Too many rocks were interfering with their field of fire.
"The great water walker himself," laughed Ediard's tormentor.
By now the smaller head-sized stones were bouncing down around Ediard. Bullets chewed the ground beside his feet. A screaming Dinlay dived for cover behind a rock, not fast enough. Bullets chewed his legs, then thudded into his torso. A stream of bullets smashed into Ediard. His shield held,
and he instinctively punched back along the line of attack. One of the ambushers flew backwards through the air, spraying blood. Three big stones crashed into Fressage. His cry was cut off. Maxon fired his pistol up at the ambushers. The ground around him was ripped apart by rapid gunfire. Ediard screamed at the massive flare of pain Maxon's dying brain unleashed. His third hand lashed out wildly again at the ambushers, knocking four of them sideways. Two came careering down the slope after the avalanche, bones snapping as they twisted and tumbled. A giant boulder smashed into Larby's chest, flinging him to the ground. More stones bounced and skittered on top of him. Ediard was dancing about on the slope, trying to avoid the lethal barrage, smacking at the stones, hurtling at him, deflecting them. Then the biggest boulder of all, nearly twice his height, slammed into the bottom of the gully, shaking the ground. Momentum sent it spinning right at him. He held it. The incredible weight was nothing. He just grabbed it with his third hand and stopped it dead in the air. It hung there, 3 feet off the ground, as his lips twisted savagely with the effort. A shower of smaller stones from the avalanche smacked into it. Ediard held fast. One of the original boulders rolled past, then teetered on the slope and skittered back down to the bottom of the gully.
"Lady, fuck!" someone's frantic long talk shouted. "How's he doing that?" "Kill him. Kill the little shit."
The rapid-fire guns began shooting. Bullets thudded into the boulder hanging in front of Ediard. He could hear strange, whirring pings as ricochets twirled off in all directions. The reverberations of falling rock grumbled away as the avalanche slithered to its end. Ediard lifted the boulder high, above his head, higher, 3 times his height, higher still. It drew level with the caves on the other side of the gully. 7 bandits were crouched down on a long ledge running in front of the dark openings. They gaped in disbelief at the massive rock that was now curving through the air towards them, accelerating. It struck the first one, knocking him away into the gully. The impact didn't even slow it down. Everyone on the ledge tried to run, but there was no room and no time. The boulder hammered into them, crushing their bodies to pulp or sending them spinning off into the chasm. Then Ediard brought it down very precisely on the last bandit. After that, he simply stood there, arms by his side, staring numbly at the great swathe of shingle which the avalanche had created on the other side of the gully. He started to shake. Arms first, then his legs trembled and his muscles gave out. He dropped to his knees. "Dinley," he called with mind and voice. "Dinley, Maxon, Topa, anyone." He sensed the fast foxes coming, slinking along the bottom of the gully, hurrying to do their master's bidding, to bring death to the intruder. Without even thinking, he shoved his third hand into their skulls and tore at the soft brain tissue. They fell silently, sprawling over the stony ground. The remaining bandits followed stealthily, creeping along under concealment, rapid-fire guns held ready. Ediard let them come close, then killed them, pulling them from where they crouched and crawled and snapping their spines. They were discarded one after the other, dropping out of the night to lie broken beside their fast foxes. He felt nothing. No sorrow, no anger. Nothing. Dinlay's shredded body was sprawled on the slope above him, where he should have been safe. Where he would have been safe after Ediard dropped him there, if he'd just stayed down. But Dinlay would never cower behind a rock while his comrades were under attack. Not Dinlay. Ediard focused his farsight down the slope. Maxon's bloody corpse was staring up at Odin's Sea. Defiant to the last, he'd even got off a shot after the first swarm of bullets had struck. Fressage and Topar were buried below mounds of stone. Bolotan had been pinned down by a rock landing on his legs. Other stones had battered him while several bullets punctured his chest and head. There wasn't much left that was recognizable, and Verini hadn't got more than half a dozen paces back up the gully before the rapid-fire guns had found him. Larby's arms and legs protruded from underneath one of the large boulders. There was nothing left of his torso but a mangled patch of gore soaking into the earth. Ediard started crying.
"Why do you do this to me?" he yelled at Odin Sea. "Lady, why? What have I done that's so evil to be punished like this? Why? Why? Tell me, you stinking bitch!"
he sobbed relentlessly.
"Why?"
Then he was curled up on the ground, helpless, wanting this monstrous life to end, wanting to die.
Edyard.
The voice was spoken from a very long way away.
Edyard, this is not over.
He wiped a hand over his face, smearing the mud and tears and blood that were clinging to him.
Who? Oh, Edyard.
Through his grief, he sighed in understanding, and extended his farsight to where he thought the voice was coming from, concentrating as best he could.
The master of Sampaloc himself, he said with bitter affection.
Maxen Sol smiled down at his friend.
The briefest reign ever.
The most memorable.
Edyard's farsight switched to Dinlay, who stood beside Maxen.
I'm so sorry.
There's nothing to be sorry for, Dinlay said. You tried to save me.
I failed.
But you tried. That's what makes you the Water Walker. Can you hear the nebulas?
Can you hear the songs?
Yes, Maxen said. They're very strong, very beautiful. It is hard to resist their call. They promise such a glorious future within the heart. But we will stay with you for now. We are pledged to do that, no matter how difficult it is to linger. There is one task we are honor-bound to help you with, Edyard, defeating whoever was behind this ambush. You will deliver us justice.
I will, he said miserably. I promise that. And thank you so much.
Maxen smiled sadly.
Edyard, can you see them?
See who? He sent out his farsight, thinking some bandits might have survived. Maxen and Dinlay drifted towards him.
Beside us, Edyard, Dinlay said.
Try, Edyard. Try to see them.
They're so weak now, so fragile. But they endure. For you.
Dear lady, they have lasted for over a decade and a half. You'll never know what that costs until you die.
What?
Focus, Edyard, Maxen insisted. The same way you see us, but go further.
Edyard attempted to do as they asked, extending his farsight, not lengthening it, but deepening the perception. There, right on the edge of his ability, he discerned two figures. They were incredibly faint, a man and a woman, badly enervated compared to the souls of Maxen and Dinlay.
I know you, Edyard said in wonder. Your faces. I remember them.
His thoughts went tumbling back through the years, back to a time when he'd run through that grand old farmhouse outside Ashwell, laughed and played all day long, gone running happily to...
Mother?
He gasped incredulously.
Mother, is that you? And father?
The tenuous souls smiled in unison. They linked hands.
Son, his father said.
It was a voice so frail Edyard was immediately afraid.
You stayed?
The tears had returned as the revelation sapped his physical strength.
Of course we stayed, my beautiful boy,
his mother said. You watched out for me.
You? It was you all those times. You warned me.
You are all that is left of us, his father said. We had to protect you,
to make sure you were safe.
Oh, dear lady, what about the songs, the call to the heart?
We love you. That's what's truly important. But you're so small.
It would be the same if we had followed the songs, his mother said with a gentle smile. They are so far away. I tell myself so few souls will ever reach the heart.
Go,
Edyard said. Go now. I want to meet you again on the other side of Odin's Sea. I want to tell you all I've done with my life. I want you to be safe.
Too late for that, son,
his father said. This has been our blessing, seeing what you have become, seeing you grow to this stature.
I'm so proud, so very proud.
I would never exchange this for another lifetime in the heart, not if I had this same choice a million times over.
My beautiful son, his mother said, I could never have dreamed for a child so splendid. You have led this world out of darkness.
No, he hasn't, Maxen said. I'm sorry, but Edyard, they knew we were coming. This ambush is about as clever and devious as you can get.
And it didn't work, Dinlay said firmly, then frowned. Not against you.
Who warned them? Maxen asked. Who is really behind this?
Edyard, the girls,
our wives. What is happening back in Macathran?
Ediard felt all the joy of his extraordinary reunion drain back out of him.
I don't know, he said, but there's someone left to ask.
The huge boulder was exactly where Ediard had left it, perched on the lip of the ledge, its immense weight crushing the bandit leader's lower legs beneath it. Despite being trapped, despite the immense pain, the desperate man had managed to reload his rapid-fire pistol. His third hand had gathered up several extra magazines full of bullets. All he needed was a clear shot. Ediard felt the man's farsight on him as he scrambled up to the ledge. He walked calmly round the boulder, and the bandit opened fire. Ediard stood there grinning as the incessant bullets pummeled uselessly at his shield.
A truly terrible weapon, Ediard said when the bullets were exhausted. Your enemies will surely be deaf for a week after that.
Go to Honius, Water Walker.
A long time after you, I suspect.
Ediard's third hand snatched the gun away. You never did tell me your name, but now I recognize that nose. It's very distinct. Just how far down the Gilmorn family tree are you?
Your friends are dead. All of them. I far-sighted that. You're all alone in ways you cannot imagine.
Really?
Ediard applied his third hand. The Gilmorn screamed as the boulder rolled forwards. His knees crunched.
Who told you we were coming?
It's over, you fucking freak,
the Gilmorn yelled against the pain. Cold sweat was seeping down his face.
We won. Even after this, we won.
The boulder turned fractionally again. The scream of agony was terrible as more of his legs were destroyed beneath the stone.
Who won? Ediard asked calmly.
You can't win. Not now, the Gilmorn wailed.
An inch at a time, Ediard warned, and moved the boulder again. And you're a tall man.
No.
Ediard thought the Gilmorn might have damaged his throat. The tormented cry which followed was so loud and prolonged.
Is this how the villagers begged and pleaded? How many have you slaughtered over the years, Gilmorn?
Ediard rolled the boulder up closer to his hips. The bandit began thrashing about, banging his head back frantically against the ledge in an attempt to split his own skull open to end the torture. Ediard's third hand swiftly immobilized him.
It was necessary,
the Gilmorn gurgled. He was having trouble breathing now. Sweat was soaking his clothes.
Necessary?
A disgusted Ediard asked.
Necessary for what? You have killed, murdered, hundreds of people, thousands. You have brought ruin to whole villages.
One nation.
What?
Ediard thought he had misheard the phrase. The slogan. Owen's slogan.
Owen. We have to be one.
A furious Ediard edged the boulder round again. The man's hips burst.
Owen!
Ediard yelled, his voice full of hatred. The Gilmorn laughed manically, allowing blood to foam out of his mouth.
One world, one nation, ruled by those of us who were born with destiny in our blood.
You did all this to crown an emperor. You... Dear lady, for this?
Ediard rolled the boulder forwards and kept it going until the screams and snappings ended abruptly.
Lady, no,
he murmured in anguish.
For all your strength, you're so weak,
the Gilmorn's soul said contemptuously. Ediard spun round. The bandit's spectral essence stood above the puddle of his own blood spreading out from under the boulder. He gave Dinlay and Maxen a scornful glance.
You could have joined with us, Water Walker. Cousin Ranelly offered you the world. A whole people, united in veneration of your strength, and you turned her down. For what? Them? What can these pitiful tragedies ever give you? Hunius awaits you,
an incensed Maxon said. Do not tarry. The Gilmorn started to ascend.
And guess what, Water Walker? My family still gets to fuck your little novice whore.
His shape blurred as it shot upwards to be lost amid the glowing beauty of the nebulas.
Salrana? Ediard murmured in dismay. Christabel!
Cancine, Maxon said.
Ediard, what is happening in Macathran? If Owen is to be emperor, this trap for us can only be a part of his madness.
Lady, damn it!
Ediard spat. He scurried down the slope and began to run along the gully. Several of the bandits' terrestrial horses were still tethered to their posts. They were skittish, but Ediard's skilled longtalk calmed them. He found a saddle among the packs and threw it over the first horse.
6 days since we left, Maxon said. What can they have done in 6 days?
It'll be another two before I can get back, Ediard said in anguish as he mounted up. Perhaps Owen is waiting to hear this ambush was successful and I am dead. He knows I can stop him, that the city sides with me.
Yes, Dinlay said. We must hope for that.
Ediard pictured a map, trying to work out the shortest way back to the main road through the mountains. Disheartened, he realized it was back the way they'd come, past Mount Alvis. But before, they'd ridden carefully, lumbering along beneath trees and in deep ravines, so as to avoid notice. Now he had no such inhibitions. He spurred the horse on, and instructed the others to follow. Dawn found him already a long way past Mount Alvis. By mid-morning he was back on the road and speeding east. He had to switch horses before lunch. The one he'd ridden from the ambush was nearly dead from fatigue. The next one was gone in the middle of the afternoon. Ediard himself was worn out, but sheer determination kept them going. The next two horses only lasted a couple of hours each. He came to a village as the sun began to dip towards the mountains, knowing full well he looked like something straight out of Honius. They might have been nervous about his appearance, but the villagers knew of the Water Walker, and gold coinage spoke a welcome language everywhere. He paid a ridiculous amount for three fresh horses and raced off into the evening. Despite the cramped muscles, the bruised and bloody chafing on his thighs, he kept on going through the night. Morning saw him arrive at the foothills of the Donsori Range, with the Uguru Plain spread out below. Macathran sat on the horizon, the gold sunlight already catching the tips of its towers. He let out a sob of relief at the sight of it, even though he was completely exhausted.
"I have to know," Maxon said, and with that he was gone, flashing on ahead through the warm winds blowing off the land.
"I will stay with you," Dinlay promised. Ediard urged his last tired horse down the switchback road. That was when he met the caravan winding its way up into the mountains. It was unusual for a caravan to be moving so early in the day. He stopped to talk with the master.
"The city is in chaos," the old man told him nervously. "There are men with guns on every street claiming to represent the new mayor. The militia regiments marched in 2 days ago, and the constables tried to stop them. There was fighting. I have never seen so many dead."
"No," Ediard groaned. "Our lady, no. Wait, the mayor called in the regiments?"
"Yes, but not Finnerton. He's dead and nobody knows how that happened. Owen has claimed the Orchard Palace, and the gunmen supported him."
Ediard desperately wanted to know about Christabel, but the caravan master wouldn't know.
"I need fresh horses. I can pay."
The old man gave him a grim look, then eventually nodded.
"We won't be back this way for a year, probably more, so I suppose we will be spared retribution."
"Retribution?"
"The Upper Council has declared you outlaw, Water Walker. We heard you were dead."
"Not yet," Ediard said through gritted teeth. "They have already found it is not that easy."
"Good. We will swap your horses. I don't need money from you."
"Thank you." "Finnerton dead," Dinlay said somberly, as Ediard rode across the Uguru Plain on a long-legged G-horse. "How dare they commit such an act? The people elected him."
"This has been years in the making," Ediard answered numbly. "All the bandit attacks, the fear in the provinces, even the gangs loose in the city, all designed to force Querentia to accept a single government, one with Owen at its head. And then I arrived.
How ironic is that? His own campaign of terror made me flee to the city."
"But what can you do now?"
"Throw him out of the mayor's office, restore the rightful government." Even as he spoke it, he knew how false it sounded.
"Good."
But the spectre's tone was uncertain.
"That's good."
Ediard didn't bother with concealment, nor even a seclusion haze. He didn't care that people saw him. He wanted word to spread into the city. He wanted people to have hope again, to know the Water Walker was coming. All would be put right. There was a lot of traffic on the road, all of it heading away from Macathran. Ragged groups stopped to stare as he galloped past. Several cheered, but the majority shook their heads in dismay at the sight of him. Long talk rippled along the length of the road.
"The Water Walker is still alive."
"The Water Walker is coming back."
The Water Walker will stop this.
The Water Walker is too late.
Too late.
It disheartened him simply because it matched his own suspicions. Apart from Christabel and a few friends, what was there for him, really? He was never going to save the city and the world from Owen's kind. All that was left now was a rescue attempt and a life in exile. It was afternoon when he reached the final approach to the city, riding hard under the fanciful variety of trees lining the road. He was the only traveller now, and his farsight swept out to review his reception. When he burst out from the end of the ancient partition of trees, even the sheep had vanished from the quarter-mile band of grassland encircling the crystal wall. The north gate was closed. A quick farsight check showed the other two gates shut as well. Half a regiment of militia was drawn up in a protective semicircle around the mighty gate. 100 pistols lined up along the road. At the front of them was a squad of guards in the uniform of the Weapons Guild. They carried rapid-fire guns. Owen's farsight fell upon the lone figure urging his horse forward, one strand among many thousands. "Turn around, Water Walker. There is nothing left for you here. Turn around. You bring only death, for these fine men will kill you no matter how many of them your strength claims at first. You cannot wipe out an entire city of adversaries." "It is not your city," Ediard long shouted back. "As you wish. May the lady have mercy on your soul." When he was barely 300 yards from the first ranks of the militia, Ediard suddenly turned his G-horse off the road and curved away parallel to the crystal wall. A cavalry platoon charged through the militiamen and raced after him. Any other time, Ediard would have laughed defiance. Now he simply gritted his teeth and asked the city to allow him entry. He turned his horse again and set it pelting directly at the crystal wall. The cavalry altered track to intercept him. Ediard kept a steely control over his mount's fluttering thoughts as it pounded closer and closer to the wall. It never faltered, not even at the end when it was going far too fast to ever stop in time. A few yards short of the vertical barrier, Ediard spurred it to jump. It leapt forwards, and to the astonishment of the cavalry in hot pursuit, it passed straight through the wall as if the tough substance were nothing more than a thin mist. They could even see it through the tinted crystal as it came down to land on the other side and continue its charge forwards. Only then did the Water Walker pull its reins back. He swung off the saddle and stood on the ground of low moat for a second before swiftly sinking straight down through the grass.
Ediard emerged in the center of the courtyard at the base of the culverted ziggurat. The city's senses had already revealed what he would find: a long row of bodies wrapped in white cloth, and Boate, dressed in the robes of a Haxpen district master, supervising G-monkeys and cowed, tearful staff on how he wanted the corpses disposed. Just for an instant, Ediard's fright lifted as he perceived Christabel standing there. But as he began to race forwards, arms open wide to greet his love, Dinlay's soul cried, "No, Ediard, she is gone like me." And Christabel turned towards him as he stumbled to a confused halt. Then he finally acknowledged she was gone, that he was far-sighting her soul as it stood vigil over her body.
"I'm so sorry,"
she told him with a forlorn smile. Ediard's whole body was trembling with shock and anger. He turned inexorably to face Boate, who was slowly backing towards the mansion's main entrance. His guards were also edging away. None dared raise their weapons against the Water Walker.
I had no choice," a pale Boate cried. "Owen ordered me to claim the Haxpen mastership for myself. There was a fight. Many were killed on both sides."
"Who did this to you?" Ediard whispered, the words barely coming out of his mouth.
"His men came at dawn 3 days ago. Homelt and our guards fought valiantly. But the guns, Ediard, they had these terrible guns. None could stand against them. They killed our guards. My cousins and the maids were raped, old and young. They spared no one as they made their way up the mansion. They forced their way onto the 10th floor. Daddy and I tried to hold them off, but they were too strong. Ediard, I jumped. I wasn't going to let them do that to me. All was lost. Daddy and I and Manatha held hands and jumped from the very top of the stairs. Did we do wrong?"
"No, my love. You did no wrong. I should have been here to protect you. I am the one who failed."
Daddy and Manatha have gone to the nebulas in search of the heart, Edyard. They follow the songs. Mummy will be there waiting for them.
I stayed. I knew you would come. I had to see you one last time before I go.
What? Duarte asked. His far sight was probing the courtyard, trying to discover who Edyard was talking to.
Who is there?
Who is there? Edyard repeated numbly. My wife is here. My friend is here. My mother and father are here. Christabel smiled at the souls of Edyard's parents.
He is yours.
He is? Edyard's mother said.
I loved him so.
We know. He never knew happiness or contentment like you.
I see no one,
a badly frightened Boate stammered.
Permit me to show you,
the water walker told him. Boate was lifted from the ground. His guards watched in dread as he began to shake violently in midair. Then he flung his head back and howled, his mind flooding the courtyard with excruciating pain. Tiny blooms of blood appeared on his robes, swiftly progressing to rivulets that dribbled down to splatter on the courtyard. That was when the guards turned and ran. They had to go a long way before the screams no longer plagued their ears. Eventually, Boate's soul looked down on his corpse as the water walker dropped it to the ground.
Do you see now? Edyard asked.
You have lost, Boate said. This is all you can do now. Kill. In doing that, in seizing power back in such a fashion, you become us.
Tears filled Edyard's eyes again as the soul slipped upwards. Boate had spoken the truth of it. There was nothing left for him. Owen and his kind had won. Killing them now would achieve nothing. The world was theirs. It wasn't one he wanted to live in. Maxen and Cancine drifted through the courtyard wall.
Bajili and Dybal are dead, Maxen said. Bice came back to Sampaloc.
Our baby is lost,
Cancine's soul declared. She was fainter than her husband.
He may be in the heart. I cannot stay. Not here. Not even for you, Edyard. I have to know if he's there. I have to know my son.
I understand, Edyard told her. My friend, I must go with my wife, Maxen said.
Of course you must.
Edyard raised a hand in farewell. You will be the first of us to reach Odin's Sea. Keep watch for us. We will all join you there eventually.
That will be the day we smile again.
Edyard watched them dwindle into the sky, then turned to the souls who remained.
We have lost.
I have lost. There is no one left but myself. His hand went down to the pistol holstered on his belt. I don't want to be alone.
Salrana,
Dinle said. He said Salrana was still alive, that they would have her. Edyard's head came up. Oh, lady. He sent his farsight flashing out towards Isidro district, not daring to hope.